she was supposed to do.
Hello, and welcome to Chumbology, a Chumbawamba anthology podcast. On this podcast, we are digging song by song, album by album, through the discography of one of the most overlooked bands of all time, Chumbawamba. And today, here it is, friends, we're kicking off a new album. This one's called Swingin' with Raymond. It's Chumbawamba's seventh studio album. It's got that cool thing that people do where they drop the G at the end of the word and put an apostrophe instead. It's a swinging album. And we're talking all about it. And for the rest of the time we are recording episodes for this album, I will not be pronouncing the G at the end of any word. That's going to be my bit for this one.
We're all N's.
We're all N apostrophes here on Chumbology. Now, we might take it to the next level on this one, and maybe we could even just not pronounce the word G and in any word, whether it's at the end or not. So instead of Chumbology, it's Chumbaloyoy. Damn, that was funny. That was a fucking funny joke I just told.
Yeah. Really, coming out the gates hard this week.
Yeah, my partner gave me a fortune cookie the other day, and the fortune inside of it was, "Your success will astonish everyone." That must have been what the fortune cookie was talking about.
I thought you were going to say the fortune cookie said you're not very funny.
Oh, damn. All right. Wow. That hurt.
Here's my pitch.
All right.
I think we need to redo the intro.
Okay.
I think we should say, we should work the term swinging in somewhere. I'm going to think of it by next week when it's my turn.
When it's your turn. That's fun. We can work the word swinging. Yeah. Okay, here we go. For the rest of this album, you and I, you know, every week we trade off who is doing the intro. It's based on who's editing the episode. And the challenge for us from now until the very end, the last wrap-up episode of Swingin' with Raymond, we have to work the word swinging into the intro at some point.
I think it'll be swinging good time.
And it and it has to be different every time. We have to find a different place to work it in every time.
Yeah, I'm going to go full Tarzan. I'm going to record myself swinging into my studio setup.
Oh man, this is going to be good. This is going to be a good bit that that is going to really make the podcast, you know, we're going to doing pretty well for ourselves.
Yeah.
So far, I think we're going to like launch into that next tier of like the song exploder, like Pod
gonna,
Save America tier.
We're going to swing into bit. It.
We're going to swing. We're coming on swinging in.
What's that? Oh, what's that? Wonder Years. The I came out swinging from a South Philly basement. That's
Who
literally
cares?
Me.
Ask Elio. Call Elio. Ask him what the lyric is.
I get him on Skype. Add him to the call.
Our resident ska and pop punk boy.
Did you see that we got a new Patreon from our good friend Rudy, who immediately got mad that I made a joke tag that ska is a bad genre? So
yeah, I
sorry
don't
to all the
why
ska heads
that.
Out there. I didn't know how tags work, so I think I tagged. There was one episode that I edited. I think it was the whatever ska album you made me listen to.
I don't remember.
I keep wanting to say Big D, but it's not Big D.
It wasn't the Boston's.
It was the Boston's.
Ah.
And so I tagged it as like podcast, whatever, ska is a bad genre. And so Rudy came on and that was like the top thing where it was like, check out these posts. And it was ska is a bad genre. So we gained and lost a Patreon in one day.
And Rudy really is like a ska like patriot, you know?
I mean,
we
their
had
name
Rudy on
is
the show.
Rudy.
What was that?
Their name is Rudy.
That's true.
They're the rude they.
We had Rudy on the show, a couple months ago.
It was literally 1 year ago. Because
was
that
it
was
a year
my,
ago? Damn.
Or it'll be a year next week because my Facebook memory from yesterday was me posting the wrap-up episode from the first album and saying, hey, we have our first guest, Rudy, on
Shit.
Next week.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean,
that means it's been close to a year since the last time I saw Rudy then. That makes me sad.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, it's been close to a year since the last time I've seen pretty much everyone.
I was about to say, like, with few exceptions, it is coming up on at least 9 months since I've seen like 90% of my friends.
Yeah, same here.
With the exception of you and Elio and Sean.
Yeah.
And I think that might be it.
I haven't seen Elio since before time.
Elio came and visited me, and we sat in my backyard back when I had a backyard where you could comfortably social distance in.
Yeah. I wish I had been able to come along safely, but I guess I just had to continue on my new normal of my Elio free existence.
I was hoping to see Elio when I went home for Thanksgiving, but now I am not going home for Thanksgiving. So
yeah, that's okay. It's a colonialist settler holiday anyway.
That's true, but I like eating mashed potatoes.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, that's my controversial opinion is that Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday. Not for any of the historical reasons, but just that I like a holiday where the whole thing is like you eat food and hang out with people you love.
Yeah. And no, I agree I like with that. I agree with that. That's a really cool concept. But
Thanksgiving food is also better than Christmas food, at least in my family. My family always does fucking fondue for Christmas.
Fondue? What?
I think fondue is disgusting. It's a Swiss tradition, apparently.
Okay.
But like, I don't know. Why do you pick the grossest fucking cheeses? I love the idea of just like dipping shit in cheese, but why does it have to be Gruyere and Swiss?
Right.
Disgusting. Like, I'm like a grown adult now. I'm 28 years old, and literally on Thanksgiving or on Christmas, whenever we go visit my family and do fondue, I bring and make a frozen pizza and feel like a child because everyone else is there eating fondue, and I'm like, no, I'm going to eat a frozen pizza. But at the same time, it's fucking Christmas. I'm not going to eat some gross-ass food I don't like. Like, it's my day.
Is fondue a full meal?
Yeah, my family goes fucking balls to the wall.
Damn.
They do apples, grapes, fresh bread, and I think some sort of meat. And then everyone just sits around and eats fondue for like 3 hours.
See, that's like not something that you can do anymore because of COVID. No. Like dipping into the same pot of liquid cheese. I've never had fondue, so I'm not going to make any comment about whether or not I think the cheese itself is good, but I'm not sharing a fondue pot with anybody anytime soon.
I mean, if the cheese is hot enough, it could kill those germs.
Is that true?
I think COVID dies at like 160 degrees or something like
just
that.
Just pour a little mouthwash in it.
Yeah. I mean, there is wine in it too. Like, I don't know if wine is sterile enough to kill germs.
Replace the wine with some Listerine.
We somehow made my least favorite like family tradition even worse by doing Listerine. God, that sounds disgusting. My stomach hurts just thinking of minty cheese. There's a lot of things that go well with cheese, and there's a lot of things that go well with mint. They do not go together.
Mint and cheese, especially the mint of mouthwash.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, man, that's good. That's really good. I'm going to try that sometime. I'm going to look up a fondue recipe and just replace the wine with some of my leftover mouthwash. I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, when you have to get your stomach pumped from drinking fucking Listerine.
So, as you've no doubt been able to tell from listening to us, this is a show where we're talking about the band Chumbawamba.
Yeah, we're talking about No Doubt, their song Just a Girl.
Just a girl who chugs on Listerine.
Yeah.
And just that's all this that girl. You'll let me be. No, this week we're starting the new album Swinging with Raymond. And the first track up is the song This Girl. It's track number one. Swinging with Raymond is an interesting album for Chumbawamba because, one, as Teddy and I mentioned last week, it's one of the ones that we are probably the least familiar with, at least in terms of like thinking about it like critically. It's probably the one I've listened to the least, and it was recorded as two separate sessions that Chumbawamba did in two different studios in the year 1995, and they decided to kind of combine them into one record. The first half is where we're starting with the song This Girl, called Lovin' It, and the second half is called Loathin' It, according to the...
It's just Love It and Hate It, not Lovin' It. This isn't
actually
a McDonald's commercial.
Actually, I'm looking... You're wrong, because I'm looking at the album insert that our friend... Nim sent us, and it says loving it and loathing it. So to eat be fair, my fucking butt.
I don't like that. I don't like the loving it because it just sounds like a McDonald's commercial. To be fair, which this might came be their, out, their what, bit.
1995, 90, yeah, like 95, 96. That was before McDonald's had the bada ba 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 loving it.
Is
so
it?
I think that maybe they ripped off Chumbawamba.
McDonald's was just like, oh hell yeah, we need to fucking. Is that? I always assume the loving it was like a constant thing, but I guess it was an early 2000s thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think because I remember when I was a child, there was a slogan that was like at McDonald's today or something like that. I don't remember. I remember my mom used to sing it to us when we went to McDonald's. So maybe it was just a little song that my mom made up. But
the loving it jingle was written by Pharrell Williams and sung serious? By Justin Timberlake.
Are you fucking serious?
No. Well, yes, I am serious.
That
and
is...
produced by the Neptunes, which we were just talking about the other day when we were talking about clips.
I'm going to need a moment to sit with that information because that's something else.
The song was written as a jingle for McDonald's commercials based on a pre-existing German campaign originally developed as Ich liebe es. Timberlake was paid $6 million to sing the jingle. Soon thereafter, the Neptunes produced a song based on the jingle and released it along with an instrumental version as part of a 3-track EP in November 2003. A digital download EP with the same name was also released through the iTunes store on December 16, 2003. The extended play included the title track and a remix for all the singles from Justin's first studio album, Justified. The song was also included on the bonus audio CD of Justin Timberlake's live DVD, Live from London. London.
I hate that. I hate every word of what you just said.
Hold on. Rapper Pusher T revealed his involvement with the song in June 2016 and claimed that he had created the I'm Loving It jingle.
I'm done. I'm done. This is it. I can't do it anymore. That's so fucking bad.
There's a music video for the I'm Loving It jingle song.
Why the fuck is there a music video for it? It's a fucking 10-second jingle that plays over like a fucking stock footage of French fries. What are you doing? What the fuck are you doing, Justin Timberlake?
Oh, man. Oh.
Man, I hate that.
I can't wait to listen to this.
Maybe that's what we'll... Maybe we can, do that for the bonus episode this week. We'll put your idea on pause.
And just do the... I don't think I want to do that.
All right. Listen. I'm so glad that we got that out of our system. Because, one, I hate it. I'm loathing it. To borrow a phrase from Chumbawamba. You know, what I am loving is actually the song This Girl. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I don't think I can spend a moment longer talking about anything else lest my fucking brain explodes. So, as I was saying before you fucking interrupted me with your McDonald's trivia, Teddy. This album is split into two halves, one called Loving It and the other called Loathing It. And the Lovin' It songs are kind of like acoustic-based, folksy songs, a little bit of a preview of the kind of folksy stuff that Chumbawamba does later on, but still like very much like a full band arrangement on most of them. And then the second half of the album, Loathin' It, is more punky, heavy songs. So we're starting off with this episode. In the next few, we're going to be talking about some of the prettier, more subdued acoustic songs, starting with This Girl. And I think I'm ready to jump in, unless you have any other fucking... Do you know anything about Burger King that you want to share?
No, I had something Wendy's? Else. Wait, what was it? Oh, Danny Elfman is signed to Epitaph Records now.
Why?
I don't know. He put out a single a few days ago. It's fucking weird.
The fuck
weird.
Does Danny Elfman need Epitaph Records for?
I don't know.
Oh man. The music industry is fucking bad, huh?
I honestly, so there's been a lot of artists that have signed to Epitaph recently that don't make sense if you look at like Epitaph's like previous history.
Yeah.
But I think it's pretty much that Epitaph is one of like the last big like quote unquote indie labels that gives artists like full control, and it's just like, fuck it, do whatever you want. So I think that has drawn them a lot of artists who don't necessarily need the money for their career, but would want the freedom of being able to do whatever the fuck they want. Like Danny Elfman. Like Danny Elfman's fucking rich as hell. He doesn't need any money. So if he wants to put out a record and wants to do it with the support of a label, but doesn't want to do it through like Warner Brothers or whatever Epitaph is, seems to be the answer for a lot of artists.
Do you think Danny Elfman's going to release like a prog rock album or something? Like,
I'll send you the song he's like, his single. It literally is like a quasi diss track about millennials that just sounds like if you watched not Nightmare on Elm Street. What's the one he did? Nightmare Before Christmas. It sounds like the Nightmare Before Christmas if it was like an edgy like alt rock song.
That sounds unbelievably bad.
It's not great. It's not the worst thing I've ever heard, but I listened to it and it was just like, I would never willingly listen to this, but teach their own.
You know what's cool, Teddy?
What?
We've been doing this podcast for a little over a year now. Yeah. This is episode 60 of this podcast. And every week we make this little outline of notes that we're going to follow and talking points we're going to hit. It doesn't matter what we plan, because sometimes it's just going to be one of those weeks where you drop some knowledge on me, like fucking Justin Timberlake performed the I'm Loving It jingle.
I knew that was going
to
happen.
Danny Elfman fucking signed to Epitaph Records.
I feel like the last few episodes we've stayed pretty on track. We've done a good job of actually talking about Chumbawamba, and to the point where I was talking to Tara and they were like, you talked about like the actual like the record last week. I was like, oh yeah, we did. Like, I don't remember. But I woke up this morning and I was like, this is gonna be an unhinged one. I can tell. I've been in that mood, baby.
That's fine. I'm glad. I'm glad to be burdened with this knowledge now. I'm sure I'll do something with it eventually.
You'll sign to Epitaph Records.
Yeah, honestly, I would. Fuck it. Who cares? It's 2020, baby. If they want to offer me a contract, why not?
It's the same record label that both Smart Death, the SoundCloud, or not SoundCloud, but like emo rapper, and also Dreg are on. Yeah. So wasn't Danny Elfman, Dreg Tour 2020.
Wasn't fucking Weezer on Epitaph at one point?
I wouldn't doubt it. Epitaph was like an indie-ish label because it started by one of the dudes from The Bouncing Souls, Bad Religion, some band like that. And then for a while it was like just metalcore, and now it's SoundCloud rap and Danny Elfman.
Great. That's one of the greatest things I've ever heard in my life. I love it. Thank you. So, you know what, Teddy?
What?
I'm loving it.
All right, so let's talk about the lyrics.
Yeah,
let's,
sure, Teddy. You want to talk about the lyrics of this song for me?
To be fair, the song's lyrics are pretty chaotic. They're true. About this girl who does whatever the fuck she wants.
Yeah, pretty much.
I like the, as we mentioned, this is part of the Lovin' It, so it's a little bit more subdued and kind of like this quiet. So you listen and you're like, oh, this is a nice like folky thing. And like on my first listen, the first lyric that jumped out to me was, let me pull it up. This girl, she got caught out in the multi-story car park throwing goodbye notes wrapped up in bricks. And it's like, damn, all right. Like, so it's like, oh, this girl, like, la, la, la. Oh, she's throwing fucking bricks now.
Yeah.
That rules.
I really like the line that comes at the end of the chorus, but she's lacing all the party drinks with venom from a poison pen.
Hell yeah.
I'm like, yeah, hell yeah. It's like, I don't know, like, this song is vague enough that, like, I feel like you can add your own interpretations to it pretty easily. Like, it's not, like, vague in a bad way, just in a, it's not, like, one of those Chumbawamba songs. It's like, this is about this specific painting that was shot, and, like, you know, like, it's not, like, hyper-detailed like some Chumbawamba tracks can be, at least not to my knowledge. If I'm missing something, you know, I'm sure we might get an email about it, but not in a bad way. I like when the emails come in.
Oh, I love when people are smarter than us. It does our job for us.
Exactly, yeah. But so I always have imagined this song as being something that's like about this woman who's like blending in with high society, but while no one's looking, she's like poisoning everybody's drinks at the cocktail hour or something. And I've always liked that image. Yeah, it's just like there's a lot of cool one-liners in here. in the album sleeve that our friend Nim sent us, there is a quote on the lyrics of this song, as we have discovered as Chumbawamba's want to put quotes matching with most of their songs. The one for this one is, "Traveler, there is no path. Paths are made by walking." And it's, quote, an old Spanish saying. And I think that that fits in with the lyrics pretty well. It's just a song about someone who's, like, forging their own path by doing, like, you know, outlandish shit or shit that's not, like, acceptable to society, right? I also wanted to point out, Teddy, you tipped me off to this.
Yes.
That there is a potential link to a real-life anarchist named Audrey Goodfriend, who was a real person who was an anarchist and founded a school in Berkeley, California called the Walden School. And I did a little research into the Walden School and found that it's like a progressive school that implements like anarchist and non-traditional like values into its curriculum and like the actual organizational structure of the school, which I thought was pretty interesting. The thing that tipped us off to that is there is a YouTube video that was made with this song and a picture of Audrey Goodfriend set to it. I don't know whether or not this was an intentional connection that Chumbawamba made, if this was even a person that Chumbawamba knew existed. It's obviously possible.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure that if you were like an anarchist grandma, like that's like Chumbawamba's like MO. I mean, now some of them are like anarchist grandmas themselves, but
true.
Like, I feel like a lot of times anarchists get painted as like angry youths in like black masks and hoodies, which we've talked about multiple times on this show that most of the anarchists are the people working at soup kitchens and shit like that.
Yeah.
But so it's cool to see this woman who lived and died as an anarchist her entire life and like was in her more notable years, like an older woman who was an anarchist running like book clubs and organizing actions and shit like that, founding a school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, Audrey Goodfriend sounds like a fake name. It's like, who's that? That's Audrey. What's her last name? Goodfriend. She's my good friend. Audrey Goodfriend.
I don't know if that connection is explicit or intentional on Chumbawamba's part, or if this was just something that someone put together in honor of Audrey Goodfriend. But either way, I could see that interpretation being made, and it's kind of cool that because we were doing this research for this episode, I now know who a different, like, historical anarchist figure is. Audrey Goodfriend did unfortunately pass away in the year 2013, which is 1 year after Chumbawamba broke up.
Couldn't keep going after Chumbawamba broke up.
Yeah, right. She had a little steam left in the engine, hoping for a reunion show. No, but she was 93 years old and seemed to have done a lot of cool shit while she was alive, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, she started acting when she was 60.
Yeah.
And performed for 25 years, so from 60 to 85. And so she passed away. She literally went to a show, came home, went out quietly in her sleep, which if you got to go out, hope it was a good play.
Yeah, absolutely. What if it wasn't? What if it was just like, that play wasn't very good. But, you know.
That's what killed her.
Yeah, that's what killed her. The bad play killed her. And one other little fact about Audrey that I found in the quick research we did before starting this episode was that she was raised by anarchist parents. So she was like in that sort of like lifestyle and like belief system from the beginning of her age. Like, you know, I know that some people grow into it like as they get older. I'm one of those people. But because she was in anarchy so young, when she was a teenager in the 1930s, according to this obituary I found for her from Fifth Estate Radical Publishing, they wrote an obituary for her that includes mention of the fact that when she was a teenager, she hitchhiked to Toronto to meet Emma Goldman.
Hell
which is pretty cool. Like, she was this person who only just passed away, 7 years ago, who, like, had a real life, like, meeting with Emma Goldman. So, it's pretty cool. Kind of like a bridge between different, like, generations of the movement.
Yeah, it's always wild remembering that old people were young once, and when they were young, there were people that were old back then.
Right,
like,
right.
My grandma was born, like, before the Great Depression and literally did not have electricity in her house when she was born.
Wow.
Like, I remember talking to her, and she talked about the first time they had an electric stove installed, or, like, a gas stove. Before that, they were cooking with wood, which is absolutely bonkers that that was a person that I knew in my lifetime whose life was eons different than what we are doing right now, sitting in our houses on both of us have two screen monitors talking to each other over the internet, like,
right.
So yeah, it's cool. So rest in peace, Audrey Goodfriend. She sounds cool as hell. Anarchist old lady is like my goal in life, just to be like a weird grandma who's just like hates fucking cops. And also she never voted, which rules. musically.
Let's talk music. I have a feeling this segment is going to be pretty similar for the next couple of episodes, but as we mentioned before, this is the first half of the album. The Lovin' It half is all acoustic, folksy tracks. This song features acoustic guitars. It has, I think that's a harmonica at the beginning, or some kind of, like, soft horn, to be honest with you. I'm really bad at identifying different, like, woodwind instruments. I don't even know. Harmonicas aren't woodwinds, I don't think. I'm gonna stop talking now, but
I think they're rebased.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of just, like, a chilled out, like, cool, like, almost like coffee shop music with these, like, really, like, kind of edgy, not edgy, because edgy sounds like it's a bad thing, but you know what I mean. Like, kind of, like, very strange lyrics underneath it, like not lyrics that you would assume would be matched to this type of song.
Yeah, so the horn and or harmonica line in the beginning, I swear to fucking God, there's a folk punk song that starts out with that exact same line. And so I asked the group chat if, like, I was like, all right, folk punks, I need your fucking expertise. What song is this? And Maddie sent me, like, five different songs that all had almost the same exact thing.
That's so funny. So, what are,
like,
they?
It was pretty much a bunch of Ramshackle Glory and Johnny Hobo songs that all start off with, like, an acoustic guitar and then, like, a harmonica or a horn line. And I don't know if they're the same exact. If you, like, recognize this, I'm convinced there is one that is exact. But the closest one was Never Coming Home by Ramshackle Glory. It starts out with, like, a very similar horn line. So just another way that we're seeing Chumbawamba's influence later on. And I don't know, I really like the song, but it does sound like a lot of music that I've heard before. Mostly because I think that a lot of bands drew influence from Chumbawamba, maybe not directly, but like this song would not be out of place on, like, a Ramshackle Glory or, like, a Nana Grizzle album or something like that.
What's interesting about it to me is that I feel like nowadays, in the year 2020, it's pretty common for people like us who grew up listening to folk punk, like, the idea of mashing together, like, acoustic instruments with, like, heavier stuff, like, heavier songwriting or, like, screaming or, like, harsh vocals or whatever, like, it's a pretty, like common idea, especially nowadays. But I feel like it was way weirder and more unusual back in the 90s and 80s that a band like Chumbawamba had so many flirtations with folk music. I mean, they put out an entire fucking a cappella album, for God's sake. Like, it's pretty interesting to think of it in that context, where I just don't think this was as common of a thing for a band to do. The first time I ever saw a band put out an album that was half soft songs and half heavy songs was the Foo Fighters record In Your Honor. So, you know, add Foo Fighters to the list of bands that were influenced by Chumbawamba.
I kind of disagree. I think that, like, this early 90s, mid 90s was, like, kind of the beginnings of, like, the anti-folk scene that, I mean, some of us now know as, like, folk punk. But, like, this was about the same time that, like, Daniel Johnson and, like, Jeffrey Lewis were kind of starting their careers. I think Daniel Johnson was a little earlier. I think he was like late 80s, early 90s, at least during his, like, big years, quote unquote.
Right.
As big as Daniel Johnson ever got.
what you're talking about is the anti-folk scene that has gone on to like influence like tons of like, I'm just saying, like, I think around this time when that scene was like beginning, it was just like that scene, part of what made it so special is that it was really unique from what a lot of people were doing.
Gotcha. Yeah, I agree with that.
Chumbawamba wasn't the only band doing this around this time, but it is worth noting that they've been doing stuff like this all the way back to their debut album in the mid 80s. So it's just something that I think is really interesting, just like tracing the fact that Chumbawamba is a punk band, but not really, but also, like, yeah, of course they are, but also they're a folk band, but also they're, like, a dance pop band. It's really weird, and I love it. But I mean, I hear what you're saying, that, like, it sounds like a lot of music that has come after it, because, like you said, I think a band like Chumbawamba had a lot of influence over the bands that we grew up listening to a lot.
And maybe not, like, a direct influence, based on the fact that we are doing this podcast solely based on the idea that more people need to know about Chumbawamba. Yeah. I think it's more of like, what's that band that everyone always says about? Like the Velvet Underground?
Yeah.
Where like the Velvet Underground weren't the biggest band, but everyone who saw the Velvet Underground at that show went and started a band or whatever bullshit. Right. I think that's similar to Chumbawamba, where I think that Chumbawamba had a lot of contemporaries that went on to like inspire the people that we grew up listening to.
Yeah. And, like, listen, there's at least one artist that was definitely, like, directly influenced by Chumbawamba that I really love listening to in Mischief Brew.
Yeah.
So, like,
I found that cover today.
Yeah.
When I was digging through, I literally listened to probably, like, not all the way through, but listened to, like, 200 folk punk songs.
Yeah.
To try and find if I could find that exact intro somewhere.
Yeah.
And I saw, like, oh, Mischief Brew did a cover of the song. I was like, that must have been it. I must have heard this song, like, 10 years ago. But the Mischief Brew cover does not have the horn line in the beginning. It's just not. An acoustic guitar.
Yeah. So.
It'll plague me to the end of the earth. If you are listening to this and you hear, we'll use it as the intro to this episode, that fucking like horn and or harmonica line, and you're like, oh, this is that song. Please tweet at us because it's driving me fucking insane. I think it might have been the Never Coming Home from Ramshackle Glory. Specifically, there's a live video where it does sound very similar, but it's not quite the same. I don't know. Maybe I'm just crazy. I'm probably just crazy.
I'll listen to the Ramshackle Glory song after we finish, and I'll let you know what I think.
Like, it definitely does sound similar, but, like, I feel like there's one that is, like, this exact horn line.
Yeah.
Probably as an homage, maybe because there are only so many notes.
Yeah, there are only many notes, and folk punk is a very narrow genre.
Yeah, that's the thing. When, like, I, like, posted it, and, like, Maddie sent me one, and I listened to it, and then they sent me another one, and I listened to it. I was like, it could have been either of these, because it's just folk punk songs in the key of C.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, man.
On that note, you want to head over to...
Yes.
Yeah.
Speaking of Mischief Brew covering Chumbawamba... It's time to talk a little Chumbawamba versus the people in the house right now.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
So the first one I want to read is on the Mischief Brew, This Girl cover.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this comment, but it's very sad. This is a somber Chumbawamba versus the people.
Yeah.
But so it's from JanP315, who says, "This is my new favorite that my son sang. Even through a cover, it is a great song. Love hearing Eric's version and miss him eternally. What a great kid my son was."
Yeah.
And like, damn, that sucks. So, but it's cool that if you are a parent, to be able to see that your son made beautiful music and touched so many people.
Yeah.
Like, all the responses are people being like, your son fucking ruled. He changed my life. There's a bunch of people who wouldn't have become radicals without him. Yeah. And that's cool.
I am going to get a little choked up talking about this, but I met Eric from Mr. Fru very briefly once when I was playing in the band Teenage Halloween. We played a show with him at the Sea Gallery. Do you remember that place in Montclair?
Yeah.
It was like the art gallery, which is like the adjoined room that was just like a brick chamber, and like the noise was like fucking deafening whenever there was a show in there.
Literally the worst acoustics of any spot I've ever played.
One of the worst venues I've ever played at, and I loved it. But
I wouldn't say the worst. The worst sound quality. It was a very nice space. The woman Mary who ran it is an absolute angel.
I loved
her.
Yeah.
My beautiful chain smoking grandma.
Talk about weird anarchist grandmas. Yeah.
Oh, she's great.
But we played it with Mr. Fru. He was closing out the night, and it was just like the first chance I ever got to see him, and unfortunately the only time I ever got to see him. And I just like was chatting with him for like maybe 2 or 3 minutes after his set, and he was just the nicest dude. And it's just like really kind of, you know, like, I knew I liked him for a reason. He was a fellow Chumbaholic. But besides that, it's just really cool to remember, like, that there are a lot of shitty people in, like, DIY and anarchy and all of these, like, circles. But there's also a lot of just really fucking cool people who are just trying to, like, use their talents and their abilities to, like, help make the world a little less shitty. So, yeah, I saw that comment from Eric's mom and got a little emotional over it. And it's just really cool knowing that, like, Chumbawamba released this music that influenced him, and his music, like, influenced me throughout my teenage and early 20s years. And it's just kind of, like, thinking about, like, the line of succession, you know? It's like Audrey Goodfriend meeting Emma Goldman when Audrey was a teenager, and, like, just thinking of all of the people who are alive today that were probably influenced by Audrey, and, like, the people they're going to influence in their lives. And it's just cool to remember, like, that we're all part of this, like, one large, like, lineage of people who are just trying to make life suck less, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm with you on that one. That's a really nice comment.
Yeah.
And
I was never a huge Mischief Brew fan. I like the hits, but not a whole much more. I think mostly just because I got into them later than I had other folk punk bands. So by that time I heard them, it was like, this sounds like all the other bands I've been listening to. But I've heard nothing but good things about Eric. I never met him, but rest in peace.
And yeah.
Once again, it's just cool. Like, it absolutely must be devastating losing a child, but to be able to just go on YouTube, type in their name, and see a bunch of people leaving, like, loving comments must be, a silver lining in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. On a more uplifting note, I've got a comment here on the This Girl with Lyrics video, which is the one that features the image of Audrey Goodfriend.
Yeah,
that just says, "Wow, I had no idea Chumbawamba was good, but holy crap, man! WTF have I been missing?"
Hell yeah! I really like this comment from Crazy Kitty Cat 100 10 years ago that says, "Anyone know what this song is about?" I'm like, not really, no. And that's okay.
Someone did respond to them. I can't find the comment that left it, but then they responded 9 years later and said, "No need to be rude."
Is it this one saying, "This song is about that girl who rebels in life. She goes against all the rules, but what does it get her in the end? The fact that she still doesn't fit in." I don't agree with that interpretation of the song.
Yeah. Imagine being such a fucking pessimist that you listen to this song as like, this is a diss track about a girl.
No, this is a song about, it is about a girl who rebels in life. She goes against the rules, but like what it gets her in the end is she lives a fucking cool life. James O'Brien, get out of here with that shit.
Fucking loser.
Yeah.
This is now a James O'Brien diss podcast. Yeah,
fuck James O'Brien, am I right? I'm going on his YouTube page. Well, the fucking banner of his YouTube page is fucking Frieza from Dragon Ball Z. Like a realistic rendering of Frieza.
Ooh, hell yeah.
So maybe I take it back. Maybe James O'Brien is fucking cool as shit. Let's see. There's also I also found a YouTube video. This one doesn't have any like super interesting comments on it, but there's another YouTube video of Dambert No Bacon playing this song alongside someone named Kira Wood at Creep Records in June of 2019, which is pretty cool.
Kira is like half of the Dambert No Bacon band. She's featured in most of his quote unquote solo stuff, which isn't really solo because she's there.
Yeah, right. It's pretty cool. I listen to it as a pretty good cover, and I always find it funny when like Creep Records pops up with like notable artists playing there, because it's a venue I've played at.
I walked past Creep Records the other day and was like, oh yeah, there it is.
Oh yeah, that place.
Back when I still felt safe leaving my house.
Right.
I've got one here. Yeah. Sorry.
No, go
from,
ahead. Go.
From Mike Norledge 2 years ago. It was in response to someone, but the original comma doesn't really matter. But this one just says, this is one of Chumba's best anti-racist, anti-homophobic, anti-sexism ditties. End of story, senior ghostlight. It takes a piece for us anarchists to realize sheep, but you understood it better than the L. So I just think that people should start saying ditties more.
It's a good word to describe music like this, too.
There was a band in like my hometown scene growing up called Diddies for the Kitties.
Yeah.
That did mostly like joke bands about how much they fucking hated their dads.
Yeah.
But Diddies for the Kitties is a very good band name. I'm going to start referring to songs as ditties. Like, oh yeah, you hear this ditty, it's a fucking bop, and then it'll be like some trap song. Like,
yeah.
Nice ditty you wrote there.
Yeah. That's a real toe tapper.
Yeah.
All right, Teddy, do you have any final thoughts you want to share about this, the song This Girl?
Yeah, it's a good track. I've been listening to this album a lot just to get myself off of listening to Anarchy every single day of my life. And I really like it, and I think that this is a good song to kick it off. I feel like they almost do themselves a disservice by calling the instrumentation like folk or acoustic, because it's definitely a lot more fleshed out than just like your average folk song. Like, there are percussion like bits in the song, especially like the part where it goes from the, but she's lacing up the party drinks with venom from a poison pen. Like, that little transition back into like the verse after that is fucking
sick. Oh yeah,
the
drum build up there is really sick. Yeah, I was a fan of that, listening to that this time around.
It's definitely a little bit more subdued than what we're coming off of from Anarchy and the other more chaotic albums that preceded Anarchy. But it's good, and I think it sets a good tone for the kind of folkier stuff that comes next, or not directly next, but comes down the line from Chumbawamba.
Yeah.
Yeah, how about you, Dan?
So this is one of two songs off of this album that I'm like more familiar with than the rest of the album. So I was really stoked to get into it. I really like the song. I think it's like a really good hook. Lou Watts, I didn't mention this during the music, but I feel like she like really shines as a vocalist on the front half of this album. And this is probably one of my favorite like performances of hers in Chumbawamba's discography. Cause it's like just her, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like
you don't have Dan Burt sing talking over it.
Don't get me
not
wrong,
that I don't love that sing talk.
I love the sing talking, but it's just like it's a different vibe. And you're definitely right. It's like a completely different like vibe from what Anarchy was. And I think that was kind of a good idea for Chumbawamba to do, to kind of like get another album out the gate that like shows off more of their range. And I think it's a good album opener. You know, if I didn't know the band and I just like found this album like in a fucking, I don't know, like discount bin at a used CD store or something.
Which is how I found Tub Thumper.
If I found it like for sale somewhere, I picked it up, I would be like, oh shit, like that was a pretty good song. I'm gonna listen to the rest of this album now. So it's pretty good. I think it's a good album opener. It's a solid Chumbawamba entry in the book of Chumbawamba. If you had to rate it, Teddy, what would you give it?
Ooh. I'm gonna give it a Twisted Hippie out of Crazy Kitty Cat 100.
Very nice.
How about you, Dan?
I am going to give it a James O'Brien out of a photorealistic 3D rendering of Frieza from Dragon Ball Z. It's pretty good.
Hell yeah.
All right, Teddy, you want to take us down to the leftism of the week?
Yeah. So Dan and I were talking before this episode about what to do on the leftism, and it kind of racked my brain that I feel like nothing good is happening nowadays.
Yeah.
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there are people doing wonderful work that I'm just not aware of. But so much of our timeline is eaten up by neoliberal bullshit and the pandemic. And I just want to use this time to say, please fucking stay home. Like, yes. It's wild that we have to say this goddamn 9 months into a fucking pandemic, but, like, if you can't see your family safely, don't see your family. If you are going to be in contact with people through work or anything like that, don't see your family. Like, it sucks. There is good news on the horizon. It looks like there's a vaccine in the works that's actually fucking, like, real. Like, I mean, not that there are fake vaccines out there, but it looks like it's, like, an actual potential end to this fucking disaster. And it sucks that America just has to wait it out and suffer until then because our country is dog shit. But until that is there, just fucking stay home. Like, it sucks. I hate it.
As much as you can.
I'm driving myself fucking insane. But you know what I'm also not doing is killing my fucking parents. Like, also, the vaccine apparently has a bunch of fucked up side effects. Like, the... Or is effect the right word? Symptoms, maybe? I don't know.
Probably side effects, yeah.
Like, so the literally, like, the second time you get a vaccine, it's a two-part vaccine, and the second dose is so fucking bad that they recommend you have to stay home for a day afterwards to recover, which sucks.
Which is kind of, sorry, I don't mean to laugh at that, but just like, oh, well, fuck it, what's one more goddamn day at home?
Like, yeah. But, like, I'm sure that this is going to be fucking ammo for anti-vaxxers to not take it, which is going to only further extend the fucking crisis that we're in.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I really don't know what to say here. I looked to see if there was anything uplifting that we could talk about, but... And once again, I'm sure there is. Black Lives Matter in Patterson is always doing great shit. There are other organizations. The Philly Liberation Center is fucking running like homeless clothing collections and delivering food, and that's all great, but we've talked about that, and I don't know, I feel a lot of despair, and I just want you, the listener, to know that if you are also feeling that way, you are not alone. Absolutely. And that if you're one of the people that, like me and Dan, is being crazy about it and not leaving your house and not doing anything, that you're making the right choice, and it fucking sucks, but I don't know. You got anything to kick in here, Dan?
I haven't seen my family since February, and, like, it sucks. I have two young nieces that, like, every time I go visit my family, it's like, damn, they're, like, growing up, like, and I'm missing it. So, like, the fact that it's probably going to be realistically over a year before I, over a year since the last time I saw my family before I see them again really fucking sucks. But I am privileged enough to have the ability to stay home and do the work that I do from home, you know, and be able to, like, live in a neighborhood where I can walk to a grocery store, all of that stuff. So, like, I can take care of my basic needs without leaving my home more often than I need to. And I think that it is the least that people like me who have that privilege can do to not make it worse for the people who can't. Like, the people who work retail jobs, the people who work... public transportation jobs, any job that, like, necessitates still going to the workplace right now. I think the least we can do is stay home as much as possible and just do what we can to stop the spread of the virus, because we sure as shit know the government's not doing fucking anything to end it.
I feel like there's a lot of talk nowadays, especially we're seeing it, especially from elected officials that are trying to place the blame on people who are going out and doing it. And that sucks. And this isn't us trying to scold you if you have been going out, if you were doing things. It's just, hey, things are getting really bad again. The thing with all the news about COVID is you have to keep in mind that it trails about 2 weeks behind the actual case numbers due to the way that the virus spreads.
Yeah.
So if you think it's bad now, it's going to be even fucking worse in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So just if you haven't been before, now is the time to hunker down, smoke a bunch of weed, and play video games for like 40 hours a week.
Start Twitch streaming
me. Start Twitch streaming.
Every time I find myself playing video games for hours and hours, I'm like, it's fine. I'm working on my Twitch stream.
Progress, baby.
So, like, I guess the only other thing I have to add is, like, it fucking sucks that we're in this situation where people are having to make the decision between staying safe in their homes, like, and, like, minimizing risk and going out into the world and working and making money.
Yeah.
It really fucking sucks.
And that's all our government's fault for failing us.
Exactly.
This is not like a personal blame thing. No. Like, I mean, unfortunately, the solution is at this point personal. Like, you have the ability to stop the spread as much as you can, but it shouldn't have gotten to this point.
No.
There are plenty of countries that are going about like their lives as normal because their country is in a fucking
province in China,
nightmare.
For example, where the virus originated.
Yeah, or Taiwan, which has not had an active case in 200 days.
Or most of Africa, where fucking, like, the virus was not a huge deal for most of the countries.
Yeah.
But, so, it is not necessarily, like, we did not get here solely because people made irresponsible decisions. Like, don't get me wrong. We all know that there are those fucking assholes who have just been like, oh, it's not bad. I'm gonna go to a fucking concert. It'll be fine. Like, we know that those people suck and shouldn't be doing what they're doing. But more importantly, like, our government has failed us, and we must acknowledge that fact. And because our government has failed us, there are a lot of people who have to go out into the world and expose themselves to risk, despite the fact that the safest thing to do would be to not do it, but they have no choice because their job necessitates it, and their job is how they're surviving. Yep. So those people don't have a choice. So I'm talking right now to the people who do have a choice to go out and saying, please, just don't.
Yeah, don't do it.
Don't do it. If you have the choice, don't do it.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the choice, if you're someone who's listening to this who works at a grocery store, a fucking restaurant, gas station, wherever you work, I'm sorry that our government has failed you so badly, and I hope you stay as safe as you can throughout the rest of this fucking bullshit.
Yeah. I think that's about it.
Yeah.
Just stay safe.
On that very fucking cheery note here.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to Chumbology, a Chumbawamba anthology podcast. This is one of the highlights of my week, getting to do this, and it is very nice to know that there are people out there who are getting something out of it. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you for sending us Twitter messages, emails, whatever. You're all great.
Yeah.
The music you heard in this episode was the song This Girl off of Chumbawamba's studio album Swingin' with Raymond, and we do not have the rights to it. But
this one we don't have the rights to. We own the rights to Anarchy now. That's official.
We do officially own the rights to Anarchy, but unfortunately we don't own the rights to this album. And if you're going to have like a problem with us using the song despite not having the rights, you better watch out because my fists are going to be swinging at your face. There we go.
Hell yeah. If you like what we do and you want to find more of us, you can find us on Twitter at Chumbology Rocks. We did just post some of the images of the album art and booklets for both this album and Anarchy, courtesy of our friend Nim. If you want to see those, check it out. You can find our website, which is chumbology.rocks, which just has more episodes, shit like that. And you can send us an email at chumbologypod@gmail.com. If you really like what we do and are like, damn, I wish I could give these people somewhere between $2 and $8 a month or $420.69 a month, you can subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/chumbology, where every 2 weeks we go through and give a different non-Chumbawamba album the Chumbology treatment and give reviews. We get a little bit more unhinged on there. I think it's a lot of fun.
We might be doing a Pokemon ranking podcast eventually for my next pick.
I think it'll be fun.
And
once again, there are plenty of causes that need your money way more badly than either of us do at this current time. So if you donate money to any sort of like mutual aid group and send us a screenshot, we'll send you any of our previous episodes or all of our previous episodes, whatever you want.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, thank you for listening. Stay safe. Keep swinging out there, folks.
take a swing at me, baby.
Remember my fortune cookie said, my success will astonish everyone.
Yeah, my success will come out swinging from a South Philly basement.
Raymond, we're going down swinging.
She was supposed to do.